It's night, dark and cold. I walk in the city alone in the crowd.
Islamic laws.
Every street, every store is filled with colors and smiles as before. I know clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I put on my headphones and play the song, which repeats in chanty whisper. I say, why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of Islamic Laws. I'm your host, Mahdi, and we're joined by Sheikh Javid. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, brother, for accepting our invitation. Dear audience, in this program, we are going to try to give answer to some questions on Islamic laws regarding Muharram and the mourning ceremonies of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. According to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But first, let's listen to a short biography of Ayatollah Khamenei. Stay tuned.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Welcome back, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. I'm Mahdi and we are joined with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, we have got a question about Muharram and mourning ceremonies. All of us know during Muharram, many people try to take part in mourning ceremonies of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. The question is that, is it permissible for women to take part in the processions where beating the chest and lashing with chains take place, provided that they observe hijab and wear special clothes?
Thank you for that very good question. Well, it is permissible according to Supreme Leader Grand Ayatollah Khamenei to for women to take part in these processions. Obviously, all men and women love Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, and they love to attend in these processions to show their emotions and respect for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. There's no doubt that it is permissible according to Ayatollah Khamenei for women to take part. But of course, there are certain rules and regulations which must be observed when it comes to observing hijab. Of course, women are expected to take special care of their hijab. They should wear proper clothing, and they should not look at women who may be on the day of Ashura, who may be partially naked. Because some women in some Muslim countries, we are not talking about Iranian Muslims or Iranian youth coming out into the street. We are talking about some Indians or some Pakistanis and Lebanese, or maybe some Shia Muslims across the world who take part in these mourning ceremonies, and they of course they take off their shirts, and while taking off their shirts, of course they beat their chests and also express their griefs and sorrow on the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. So women should not look at these men who are shirtless, who do not wear a shirt. But when it comes to women coming out into the streets to take part in the processions, and also to take part in the mourning ceremonies, of course there is no doubt that it is permissible for women to attend these programs.
So the important point is that they have to take care about their hijab.
Hijab, sure.
And they don't have to look at those who are not having clothes on.
Sure.
Dear Sheikh Javid, regarding Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and all our imams, we've got another question, which is, what is the ruling in the matter of people who let themselves fall onto the floor before they enter the holy shrines of imams alayhi salam, rubbing their face and chests on the ground and bruising their body and causing it to bleed?
Such practices are not understandable for outsiders, for people who do not understand the concept of mourning and were not very much into these ceremonies. Of course, let's not forget that prostrating yourself in front of the shrines and also in front of the chambers is not appropriate, because it is deemed or reckoned by some people as a kind of prostrating for someone other than God. And of course, prostrating yourself for someone other than God is absolutely forbidden, because prostration or sajda is reserved for God. It is exclusively for Allah the Almighty. And therefore, it's not permissible to prostrate yourself in front of the holy shrines or in front of the graves, because it's a kind of, considered offensive. We have to, of course, acquaint ourselves with the teachings of Islam and also with the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And of course, there's nowhere mentioned in the in our religious sources, as well as in the Quran or any other Shia books authored by the prominent Shia scholars, that such a practice is permissible. Of course, prostration, sajda, is only for Allah, and no one else deserves to be prostrated.
Apart from prostration, how about actually hurting our bodies?
That's a different question. Of course, we can deal it in a separate, maybe episode. If not in this episode, of course, I would like to briefly touch on it. I would say that according to His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, hurting ourselves or beating, lashing ourselves with swords or knives or anything which may cause our body to bleed is not permissible according to Supreme Leader and also according to many other religious authorities, because such a practice is not considered to be a manifestation of azadari or mourning for Imam Hussein. No one in the modern time and none of the Shia religious authorities, of course, consider such a practice, beating yourselves with knives or hitting yourselves with swords to cause your body to bleed. He considers this practice to be a manifestation or to be an expression of mourning for Imam Hussein.
Or rubbing our face on the ground.
Of course, let's also understand that when it during Azadari or during the month of Muharram, we are supposed to listen to the lectures delivered by prominent religious authorities, by prominent scholars and prominent eulogists. Of course, it's very much important to, if possible for us, it is very much important to narrate the incident of Imam, the incident of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, and to remember their sufferings. Okay,
that's right.
Because we do know that Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam sacrificed his life
and his family,
and also that of his family members for the sake of Islam, and in order to protect the religion of Islam, and also to defend Islam against the, you know, against the
derivations,
against the enemies of Islam, including the Bani Umayyads, who were trying day in and day out to destroy Islam by in one way or the other. So it is very much important to narrate their stories and also to remember their sufferings.
That's right.
And the best way to narrate to remember their sufferings is to, of course, to learn lessons from this incident, and also to listen to the lectures delivered by learned and knowledgeable scholars. And not to hurt ourselves using knives, using swords.
Not doing rough actions, actually.
Of course, these are violent actions which are usually misunderstood and misinterpreted and also exploited by the mainstream media.
Thank you, Sheikh Javid. The audience, stay with us. We are going to be back after a short break. Stay tuned.
Millions of stars, your eyes pull me to you. Who are you? I walk in the day with millions of angels. I see you in all these faces. Who are you? One step I fade away, the next step I'm born again. You're flowing. To me, desire.
Welcome back to your audience of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Laws. Well, Sheikh Javid, just before the break, we talked about the issues of actually hurting our bodies. Concerning our previous topic, we have another question, that is, what is the ruling in the matter of lashing oneself with chains as done by some Muslims?
Well, as we as I said earlier, any practice that causes bodily harm to the individual or leads to the defamation of the faith of the religion and leads to some kind of insult to the religion is haram according to Ayatollah Khamenei. And therefore, the believers have to steer clear, you know, clear of it, and they have to stay away from doing anything which is degrading for the religion, which is
defaming, as you
defaming the religion or the faith. And there's no doubt that many of these practices damage the image of Ahlul Bayt or distort the image of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, and also the school of the shared school of thought. Practice, as I said, is not properly understood, and it's not considered to be a manifestation of mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. It does not serve any purpose other than damaging and destroying the image of the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam. So we have to, of course, encourage everyone to avoid practicing self-flagellation, because of course we should not even use the term self-flagellation in the first place, because this is a term which is used in the Christian context. Mm-hmm. We have nothing to do with self-flagellation, but of course the mainstream media do use this word somehow to suggest or to indicate that she has also self-flagellate and hit themselves to somehow to show their regret over the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, and also to mortify their flesh. But this mortification of the cell of the flesh is a Christian, as a pure Christian concept, which the Shia religion or the Shia school of thought has nothing to do with.
Thank you, dear brother Sheikh Jawid, for your nice answers. And thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio, for staying with us. In case you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until our next episode, fi amanallah and goodbye.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave, mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received, Hussein planned to retrieve, loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received, Hussein planned to retrieve, loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new lands.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colours against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth. Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here and we make our round. We start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinan County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Now we'll take you to mind-riddled French island, Chesomes, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into walker's paradise. Chesomes, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some walkers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism. The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years. French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. Warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day, since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, five lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr. He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati,
there is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite scholars, dignitaries, and ulama. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, one from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi, and another from the University of Qom, a faculty member of University of Qom, Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhrouani. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Dr. Fakhrouani, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum.
So in this new series of the program, The Teacher, in the month of Muharram and Safar, we try to talk about and discuss the life and works of those outstanding ulama who produced at least one outstanding work about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. That's why for today's discussion, we want to talk about Muhammad ibn Abi Talib Husseini Ha'iri, one of the outstanding Shia scholars of the 10th century Hijra, whose book on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam became famous. The book is Tasliyatul Mujalis wa Zinatul Majalis. Before getting to the main content of this book and his research methodology in this book, which was really trusted by Allama Majlisin Baharul Anwar II, Shaykh Mahdavi give us a little bit background about the life of Muhammad ibn Abi Talib Husseini Ha'iri Karaki.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Our condolences on the martyrdom of Aba Abdullah al-Hussein and his loyal companions. As you mentioned, we have at the end of his name Husayniye Ha'iri Karaki, starting the title Muhammad ibn Abi Talib al-Husayni al-Ha'iri al-Karaki. These titles, each one is referring to the actually relation that the author has with that Karaki is coming from his hometown, mm-hmm. whereby he was born, one of the cities or one of the villages in Damascus, or better to say in the Syria or Shamat.
Yes.
And then he moves to Karbala. Mm-hmm. When he moves to Karbala, as we know, another name for the Karbala is Al-Ha'ir. Mm-hmm. That's why he belongs himself and relates himself to this place where he stayed for a long, actually, period of his life, and al-Musawi because of his actually relation to descendant of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. That's why.
So Ha'iri means from Karbala.
Yes, al-Ha'ir.
Okay. Or associated with Karbala. Okay.
Yes, al-Ha'ir. Okay. There's a long story behind this, why it is called al-Ha'ir.
Okay.
So, we don't know much about his background, but researchers were trying to locate the time in which he was living. That's why he picked some of the pieces of his book as the evidence to say that he was living during the time of Safavid era, which was actually starting from the beginning of the 10th century mm-hmm. after the Hijrah.
Okay.
So many books or works has been written for this scholar. When we look at these books and works, we may consider him as mainly be a speaker.
Uh-huh. An orator. Yes. Okay. A khatib.
Yes. Yes. And we have some of the researches in Farsi language in terms of his book mm-hmm. and also his works and the personality. Okay. So we see that he was also a poet. Many poetries has been narrated from him. He had a lecture or khutbah in terms of the Milad al-Nabi.
Yes.
And then we have the khutbah, Ghadiriyah, in terms of the Ghadir.
Okay.
And also the khutbah regarding the marriage of Hazrat Zahra and Amir al-Mu'mineen.
Yes.
When we look at these works, it gives us this picture that he was the orator or the speaker. Okay. And also we have As-Saj' al-Nafis fi Muhawarat al-Dalal wa Iblis. Divan al-Ash'ar, Tawdhih' Adillat al-Tawheed. And the rest of his works gives us this picture that he was really a prolific author his time. Most of his time and works has been dedicated to the preaching, the religion, and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam.
That's right. And this, we can say, being a khatib itself is a really skillful activity. We have to talk about it in details, inshallah, in other programs. Dr. Fakhrani, let's get to the book that was authored by, we can say, this outstanding man, Muhammad ibn Abi Talib Ha'iri Karaki, and that is Tasliyatul Mujalis wa Zinatul Majalis. Really, the name, the title in Arabic is really beautiful. First, talk a little bit about the meaning of the title for us, and then the main content of this book.
Yes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa binasta'in. Sallallahu alayki wa abdullah. Assalamu alayki wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. It must be indicated that the first word of the Arabic title, Tasliya, expressing one's condolences or sympathy, indicates that the audience of the book should be those who attend mournful sessions or mournful gatherings in favor of the Ahlul Bayt.
Okay.
I mean, semantically speaking, I mean, he was, I mean, the author was certainly a skillful man of letters, Arabic letters, to know which words to use.
That's right.
In the beginning, I mean, the book consists of, I mean, five sessions or five, I mean, gatherings.
Yes.
The first one.
You mean you are talking about the word majlis?
Majlis.
Which is, you know, in the Islamic terminology, it refers to the gatherings that are held for commemoration of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, especially.
Yes.
Especially, usually for Imam al-Husayn.
Yes, usually. Okay. Yes. Okay. The first majlis or the first gathering is concerned with the point that Imam al-Husayn al-Salam was an oppressive imam.
Okay.
And there are many religious rewards for shedding tears in his favor.
Mm-hmm.
The next one turns to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Okay.
The third majlis or the third gathering is concerned with Imam Ali alayhi salam together with Hazrat Zahra salamullah alayha.
That's right.
The fourth majlis delves in the case of the second infallible Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba salam. And particularly the peace treaty that was signed between Muawiyah and Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And this is very important. Okay? Another one, the last one, right from the fifth majlis up to the end of the book, which must be the tenth majlis, is they are all devoted to the life and times and maqtal of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
So from the fifth one to the tenth one, dedicated to Imam al-Husayn.
Yes, it must be indicated right from the beginning of the book up to the fifth majlis or fifth chapter of the book. I mean, they give some background information or historical background of Shia, early Shia history.
Uh-huh.
And from the half of the book up to the end of the book, the whole book, the second half, is entirely devoted to Imam al-Husayn as the main concentration of the book.
That's right.
Yes.
And this is a sermon-based, because it is written in a form to be presented.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In the form of some ready-made presentations.
Presentations, that's all right. Yes. And this really differs from the research methodology that the others will have about the history of Karbala and Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, because they are going to be presented, so that the method of compilation must be a little bit different. Okay, Sheikh Mahtavi, what about you, brother? Can you give us more information about this book?
I think one of the things that must be taken into consideration for our listeners not to mistakenly understand the content of this book, I have to say that maybe our listeners, because of the title of the book, specifically the last part of it, which says Zinatul Majalis, and then right now we benefited from our teacher, Dr. Fakhr Rohani, that he said in each sermon could be used.
Yes.
We have to mention that this book is a very huge book, consisting of 1,000 pages.
Wow, really?
Yes.
1,000 pages?
Yes, two volumes, 1,000 pages. Oh. So when the author is giving the title of Al-Majlisul Awwal, we couldn't expect that he is going to end his speech in 20 pages, 30 pages, 50 pages. No, it will reaches up until 150 pages, or for some of the majalis, 200 pages. Because you have to consider, you have 10 majlis and you have 1,000 pages. Okay. So the way you are going to allocate the pages regarding your topics, it means that it's a very huge book. This is one thing. So you can consider this book as a kind of encyclopedia regarding not only Imam Husayn, as it was said just now.
Yes.
The last five volumes are regarding Imam Husayn alayhi salam, but the first five volumes are regarding the Prophet,
Imam
Fatima salamullah alayha, and the rest of the Imam.
Yes.
Okay. This is one point. And the other thing, this book could be taken as a very precious index for our historical books, some of which we don't have any access so far, but we have one evidence from 10th century referring to them. For example, let me bring up one example.
Very good.
Shawahid al-Tanzil. Uh-huh. Right now, because Shawahid, the version of Shawahid al-Tanzil for Al-Imam al-Haskani, as we know, the version of this book recently, 40 years ago, had been published under the supervision of Allama Mahmoudi. But nowadays, we have many criticisms saying that Iranian had invented this book. Why? Because the book has been authored by a Sunni, but talking about the ayat from the Quran, which quotes Amir al-Mu'minin.
That's right.
So they are saying that maybe this book has been invented by a Shia, but when you look at this book, I mean Tasliyatul Mujalis, which has been authored in the 10th century, referring to Shawahid al-Tanzil. So it's kind of a bridge linking us almost from now. It gives the authenticity to the book of Shawahid al-Tanzil. And not only Shawahid al-Tanzil, we have at least more than 30 books.
Yes.
Which the author of Tasliyatul Mujalis has benefited from. So when we refer to this book, it is not only to benefit from the information of the book.
Yes,
we can take it as an evidence from the 10th century announcing what type of the books and bibliography we had at that time.
These are really analytical details good for our researchers who are interested, for example, in the manuscripts or, for example, the codicology or something like that, you know, in order to trace back the references, whether it is authentic. But for sure, in a 10th century book, we had the name, for example, of Shawahid.
We see the trace of this book over there. Okay. And we see that this book is very important to the degree that Ayatollah Majlisi, or Sheikh Majlisi, Alam Majlisi, is referring to this book in his Bihar al-Anwar.
That's all right. Okay. Okay, Dr. Fakhrani, any mispoint about this book? I mean, say how to benefit more from this book?
In this regard, I should like to say that, as the colleague has mentioned, I believe that such sources, though some of them may sound to be now by present-day standards, they might be regarded as, I mean, medieval books. First of all, the research values should be highlighted, and through highlighting the research value, scholarly value, present-day generations would understand that, these indications and accounts that are given haven't been fabricated, rather they are all based on authentic research and reliable scholarship in the past. This is one point. Another point is simply that it would be quite beneficial to the posterity, as well as to the people of our generation, if very meticulous scholars come up and provide detailed indexes, indexes of place names, names of persons, names of, for example, tribes or Quranic verses or, famous hadiths indicated in the book, so that the researchability of the book would be highlighted.
That's
because
all right.
when, a book is presented, is published, this is the first step. However, it isn't the final step. The final step would be to make the book as accessible and as reader-friendly as possible.
That's all right. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Fakhrani and Sheikh Mahdavi, for your presence in the program. The teacher talking about the late Muhammad ibn Abi Talib Hayri Karaki. We can't say of whom. There is not much information, but what is known is that he has been the author of the book Tasliyatul Mujalis wa Zinatul Majalis, compiled on 10 majlis, including also the majalis for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the sermons that are given by the orators on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Assalamu alaikum ya Abu Abdullah al-Hussein.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on iRib English Radio, Kalav Islam Page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
جلد 43 بهار الانوار روایت هست که خداوند متعال وقتی دور حضرت
In volume 43 of the book Bihar al-Anwar by Allama Majlisi we read when Allah created the light of Hazrat Fatima az-Zahra all the angels were shocked by the radiance of her light The angels asked Allah about the nature of this light and Allah answered The light of Fatima is from my light, and her greatness is from my greatness. I put my light in the progeny of my last prophet, who is the best among my messengers.
بعد خدا متعال فرمود اخرج منه انوار الائمه
Then Allah continues truly the light of the infallible imams is taken from the light of Fatima In better words Hazrat Fatima az-Zahra is the path of mercy and blessing between Allah and the other infallibles In the same context Imam Hasan al-Askari states we imams are the proofs of Allah on earth And our mother, Hazrat Fatima az-Zahra, is the proof of Allah upon us. This shows the great status of Hazrat Fatima az-Zahra. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech on iRib English Radio, Kalav Islam Page, which was the English translation of a short Persian speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Kalav Islam Page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
internet trolls.
Part 3.
The internet. What began as an exclusive tool to connect militaries, governments, and then universities has now, more than 60 years later, transformed everything about how modern societies operate and communicate. Today, no one can escape the grasp of social media or evade the mind-boggling connectivity that nearly all humans worldwide now have access to. But few have been prepared for what has also emerged with all this human connectedness. A new and ominous strain of human behavior has been unleashed. Increasingly, people are hiding behind a cloak of anonymity, waiting to provoke, harass, and even threaten anyone they choose. They are called internet trolls.
A troll is someone devoting large parts of their life to attacking other people on the internet, basically trying to make that other person's life miserable in some way.
They send things to my home. It terrifies me to think what they could do if they wanted to, knowing exactly where I live, knowing where my children go to school.
Trolls can be a minor annoyance or a life-crippling terror. But what happens if society tries to silence them? Who loses then?
Trolling is a free speech issue. And if you aren't free to hate someone, then you're not free.
I've been associated with all kinds of organized trolling groups. We're stretching the bounds of free speech. You either use it or you lose it. Feelings will be hurt.
Politicians and the courts are now grappling with who really is a dangerous troll.
I've been called troll by very powerful people that should know better. Homophobe, misogynist, racist, all this stuff is just lazy people not wanting to interact.
Artist Gregory Allen Elliott is at the center of a landmark trolling case that might land him behind bars and forever change what any of us, anywhere, can or cannot say online.
If Mr. Elliott is convicted of a criminal offense, watch out. Nobody will be safe. You better shut up, because if you don't, he could be going to jail.
Gina's blog earns her family a decent income. She writes about being a stay-at-home mom, but from a pro-choice, modern feminist perspective. And a large, active community of like-minded women has grown around her blog.
I like to see that recognition response when someone else goes, oh, me too. And that's so validating. That's why I do it.
Hounding people when they are most vulnerable, like at the time of a loved one's funeral, is a surefire hit for the troll.
That's the easiest way for us to create a mass effect. It's really effective when you have all these people who are already emotional. Drop this bomb on them, you know, with the gore photos, maybe some kind of sexually explicit photos. It sends their emotions into overdrive.
But what do the trolls get out of seeing these distraught reactions?
When I used Twitter, I used it as pure form. As an artist, I just went, this is a brush. This is some paint. This is a canvas. I used it to comment on politics. I used it to help people. And I just used it every way possible. One day I responded to every tweet that came across my tweet stream. And then someone said, you don't have to respond to everything. And I said, I know, right? But today that's what I'm doing as an artist and an experimenter.
At one point, Gregory was sending 300 tweets per day. He was acerbic, sometimes crude, and very opinionated. Inevitably, he made some enemies who wanted to shut him up.
Mr. Elliot was disagreeing with Stephanie Guthrie's politics. She's the founder of a political organization in Toronto called Women in Toronto Politics. Mr. Elliot was an ally of hers for a number of months. But then there was a break in the relationship because Mr. Elliot stuck up for someone he believed was being bullied by